Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Strong and Sassy live on Joy 99.7 FM. I'm Noella Karenialli, and of course, I'm sitting in for your regular queen, Enimua Enim Ado. And today we have a very special guest, Dr. Samke Joan Nwobo. I hope I got that right. Now, Dr. Nwobo is a remarkable individual who wears many hats, okay? She is a medical doctor, an author, a passionate mental health advocate. She is the founder and chief executive of Vocal Mentality. Later on in the show, we're going to be talking more about this organization. Now, diagnosed with bipolar disorder, type 1, at the tender age of 14, she has not only navigated her way through the challenges of this condition, but has also risen to become a medical professional and a beacon of hope for many others out there. Now, today we'll be delving into her inspiring journey, discussing her experiences living with bipolar disorder and how she has managed, you know, to carve out a successful and impactful career for herself. And so, ladies and gentlemen, welcome Dr. Samke Joan Nwobo.
Thank you so much, Noella. It's so wonderful to be here, and hello to everybody. And
right. Oh, but you're very beautiful.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So once again, you're welcome to Ghana as well. Yes. Is this your first time?
Yes.
Oh.
And first of many times.
Oh, I see. First of many times.
Yes.
So you've been here before?
No, I've never been here before, but this is the first, and I'm going to come back.
Oh, okay. Come back. But prior to you coming to Ghana, what were some of the tales you heard about Ghana?
Oh, no, I've just known that it has a rich history and heritage.
Right.
So that's what I've been looking forward to experiencing. And
right.
I was today at Kwame Nkrumah. Yes, Nkrumah.
So. Right.
And it was wonderful to be there.
Okay.
And it's living up and
every expectation. Awesome. How about food?
Country.
Have you tried any?
Yes, I tried the jollof rice.
Okay.
I love the seafood that you have here. I mean, it's on
awesome.
The coast. So
awesome.
I haven't been as adventurous as I can be. So
I see.
In terms of the food, but I'm definitely intending.
I mean, you never know. Maybe I'd give you a treat or something later
okay.
on.
Okay.
You never know. But yeah, once again, you're welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thanks also for honoring our invitation. Now, let's get straight into business and talk about bipolar disorder. For someone who's listening and probably does not know about this condition, what is bipolar disorder and what are the types, you know, that differentiate them?
Bipolar disorder is a type of mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
Previously used to be categorized as a type of a mood disorder, so it used to be made to be as part of the depression family.
Mm-hmm.
But over time it's been found that it exists in something called a spectrum. So between what would depression be and what would schizophrenia be, somewhere in between the spectrum of that.
Mm-hmm.
And what makes it different to other mental illnesses is the presence of mania.
Okay.
Mania is an expansive, irritable, grandiose mood.
Mm-hmm.
And there are also symptoms that make it that needs to be satisfied in order to say that somebody has bipolar disorder. So flight of ideas, increased thought speed,
mm-hmm.
racing thoughts, goal-directed activities. So there's a number of symptoms that one presents with, and engaging in high-risk behavior such as overspending could be one of them, higher
mm-hmm.
sexual behavior, it could
mm-hmm.
be gambling.
Mm-hmm.
And one has to deviate from their normal way of functioning.
Mm-hmm.
So it impairs your daily life.
Mm-hmm.
So one can say, how I could have bipolar disorder. I have done all these things. Why am I not necessarily having bipolar disorder?
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that the things that you do have to hinder your social, occupational functioning.
Mm-hmm.
And that is when one can call it a disorder. And that is why it's so important
mm-hmm.
for it to be diagnosed by a professional instead of us looking at the internet and then saying that
okay.
we have a condition.
Okay. So, I mean, you have lived it. So talk me through your experience. I mean, you were diagnosed at 14.
Yes.
So what were some of the symptoms? What were you exhibiting? What did you notice with yourself that was different?
So I was diagnosed with mental illness at the age of 14 years old.
Okay.
I could not have possibly diagnosed myself at such a young age or have known that I need, I'm behaving in a way that requires intervention in a hospital. So my behavior was escalating. So mood swings were changing, you know, they were escalating in terms of severity. And I don't think anyone picked up because, you know, I think people dismissed it as thinking that it's just a teenager. And, you know, she's her moods are fluctuating because of that reason. And over time, I started believing that the radio was communicating with me directly. I felt that the billboards were communicating with me. I started hearing voices as well and thought I was communicating with deceased loved ones as well.
Okay.
So when things became that much escalated and worse, that's when my parents thought there's something very wrong here. I was becoming very paranoid. I felt that my phone conversations were being recorded. And then my parents rushed me off to seek mental health care support. And that was the time that I was getting the intervention basically with my first presentation.
Okay. So your type is type 1?
I have type 1 bipolar disorder. So thank you for reminding me about that. There's differences in slight differences. There's type 1 bipolar disorder and type 2 bipolar disorder. Type 1, that both of them have the symptom of mania, but type 2 has something called hypomania, which is a less severe kind of mania. So there's also the duration of time whereby you could have these symptoms for a period of a week. These symptoms I described earlier on. And with type 2, they will exist for maybe for 4 days. So any presentation in your lifetime of mania means you have bipolar. I could have it once in my lifetime. But if I present with manic symptoms, that means I have the diagnosis. So that's the difference between type 1 and type 2. In the past, people used to assume that bipolar type 2 is the less severe bipolar. So you have type 1, which is the baddie, and type 2 is just the less severe one. But the reality is that type 2 hinders your way of functioning in the world as well, the functionality that I spoke about, the impairment. So we can't say that type 2 is the less severe one. It may present in a different way, where many people will have more of the depressive symptoms, more than they would have to have the manic symptoms, but they're not. One is not the less severe form of the other, basically.
Okay. Yes. So, I mean, with a type 1, what's the most extreme symptom about it? And I'm building up the conversation. I'd get to where we're going. But I want to know, I mean, you've talked about how you used to get paranoid and, you know, think that your phone calls and all of that were tapped and all. But what is like the most severe with the symptoms?
You know, those symptoms can be very hindering in how you're functioning. So that's when you're complicating, because when you're having bipolar disorder, it's usually the mood fluctuations and, you know, you can, the high risk behaviors that you can engage in. So the severity of those symptoms can vary from person to person. There's people who have never been admitted in the hospital because of the bipolar disorder. So they may
also have a symptoms are unique.
In severity-wise, it can vary. So there's people who may never have been admitted to hospital even once in their lifetime. Then there's people you'll find that they're admitted several times. They will do disorganized things that they don't take responsibility for or they can't control at that time. So the presentation, the things I mentioned can come in varying severity, basically. So one can overspend. One could end up in high-risk behavior. The fleeting thoughts can end up being in very dangerous situations because of those things. So the severity can vary, even though the presentation can be similar with the flight of ideas and so on.
Okay. Yes. So, I mean, here in Ghana, we have some notable personalities who have communicated that they have been diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And for some of the symptoms that they themselves have, you know, revealed to us, is it possible to have an experience or a manic experience where you get to share, you know, names of people you've been with sexually and stuff like that on social media?
It can happen. You know, social media can be the use of social media when you have a mental illness can be very problematic.
Okay.
So not everybody will do the same things, basically. So that's why I was speaking about the symptom cluster. So someone might not have certain symptoms or engage in certain behavior when they're unwell. But there's people who will end up doing certain things when, particularly when they're unwell. So those things are possible because it's the high-risk behavior that I mentioned and that particular person may be naming what how they behave or how they symptoms of the bipolar disorder present. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that everybody will do that, mm-hmm. but the symptom, there's certain symptom criteria that has to be satisfied. So for example, what I mean is you could have 3 out of the 6 that you could present with, as mm-hmm. an example. And that is what
you okay. want to present with. So take me through your experience, you know, transitioning from a teenager to becoming an adult, developing from that stages, and, you know, the stigma around it and how people, I mean, how did it affect you and affect you growing up?
It did become quite a lonely place for me, especially with the initial diagnosis. People did not know what had happened to me. Mm-hmm. I've experienced different kinds of stigma along the way. Mm-hmm. From a cultural perspective, mm-hmm. people thought I was bewitched. They'd say she's too intelligent, that someone has done something mm-hmm. to her. Mm-hmm. And this is common in the African community, mm-hmm. that we often dismiss it and from the cultural perspective. Mm-hmm. Then from a religious perspective, people thought I was demon-possessed. I always narrate the story that I remember so distinctly, mm-hmm. where I was exorcised in the hospital. So at that time, one may not know what exactly was happening, but mm-hmm. I remember people coming from the church community coming to bring prayers, and they were laying hands on me, and you uh-huh. could see that the aggression was building up uh-huh. and the noise was building up in the ward. Uh-huh. And it wasn't an ordinary prayer, because the ward was in a standstill after a while. Uh-huh. And it's only in hindsight that I realized that they thought they were casting something out of me uh-huh. Because they believed I was demon possessed. Uh-huh. Other people would call me the weakest link, I don't pray enough, the demon came because of me. Uh-huh. They didn't know what to say. People uh-huh. did their best with what they knew how, uh-huh. and they explained it the way they best understood it to uh-huh. be. The worst form of stigma that I experienced was related to self-stigma.
Okay.
I was ashamed. I didn't understand what was happening to me. So it was very difficult for me.
Right.
And it was very lonely as well, because I did not know what I had done to bring something like this upon mm-hmm. myself. It's not like I had a reference points from a previous person in mm-hmm, the family mm-hmm. who behaved the way mm-hmm. that I did. So I really internalized what was happening mm. to me.
So in all of this, did you have any kind of support system?
Yes, I've through my life, I've had an excellent support system. Mm-hmm. My family has been incredible. It's been difficult for them, I have to be honest. Mm-hmm. My friends have been amazing. I've kept the same friends for long periods of time. Mm-hmm. Like, friends from preschool are still in my life. Friends from Sunday school, friends from high mm-hmm. school are still my friends. And that's been a very important safety net, to have people who know me, the true essence of who I am, so that mm-hmm. if I'm being irritable, one of my main symptoms oftentimes is related to irritability. I forgot to mention the irritability. Mm-hmm. So how do you know then if I'm sitting with you right mm-hmm. now and I'm being dismissive or rude towards you? You can't, mm-hmm. a person who doesn't know me mm-hmm. won't necessarily know that it is because she's unwell. They'll mm-hmm. think I'm a rude person. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So to have people who understand me when I'm functioning normally has been very important to me. My high school career was largely uneventful for the rest of the for the remaining time. Mm-hmm. So I was in grade 9 at the time, age 14. Mm-hmm. I continued with my schooling. I performed very well, mm-hmm. Obtained a bursary to get into medical school, and things were largely quiet initially, first year, second year, third year, and then by third year, I don't know if it was the pressures of life or life mm-hmm. challenges along the way, but my illness came in the worst way.
Mm-hmm.
I was being admitted to hospital annually, twice a year, and it would be for about 2 weeks at a time. And oftentimes when you're admitted, say for a week or 2 weeks, mm-hmm. you have to be booked off even after that mm-hmm. to recover and bounce back, so to speak. You mm-hmm. can't just be discharged today and return to functionality the next mm-hmm. day.
Mm-hmm. So it's a gradual process.
It's a gradual mm-hmm. process. So I really struggled in medical school mm-hmm. Because of my illness.
Mm-hmm.
I did not understand what was happening to me. And I also felt that people did not really explain the illness to me so mm-hmm. that I could understand it for mm-hmm. myself. So mm-hmm. they thought that I was uncooperative
mm-hmm.
In terms of taking my medication. I was just upset about the side effects, where the medication would make me gain about 30 kilograms in a small space of time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very antagonistic relationship between myself and the medication mm. and the condition itself. So in my mind,
mm.
intellectually, I acknowledged, I would tell people I have this condition, well, mm-hmm. the close people in my life,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't accept it fully. And I always tell people that it took me 16 years to finally accept my diagnosis. So I really only accepted that I have bipolar disorder and be able to talk as openly as I am now, or only more recently in the recent 5 years, to speak as openly mm-hmm. as I do now, mm-hmm. because I learned to befriend my condition mm-hmm. instead of treating it as an enemy. And mm-hmm. when I learned that, and also encountering the right care, mm-hmm. Comprehensive care and support mm-hmm. from professionals as mm-hmm. well, that's what helped me. And right. I live a very normal, functional, amazing life awesome. With its own challenges.
Right.
But for somebody that has a condition that has such a high level of stigma and judgment, mm-hmm. I believe I'm doing well.
Awesome stuff. We'll talk more about the challenges. But there's something you mentioned. Does the symptoms ever make one get violent? Is it possible to get violent as one of, you know, the symptoms of bipolar? One, the type one. Yes,
you can. Mm. Especially in a space or in a state where your emotions are not in control, because it's a chemical mm-hmm. imbalance mm. And you require mood stabilizers and so on, especially if you end up becoming a severity or a form, a mental state called psychosis.
Mm-hmm.
Psychosis is when you are having perceptual disturbances, you're losing touch with reality, mm-hmm, basically. Mm-hmm. So you can end up doing things that are really quite harmful to right. you because of the fact that, or harmful to others as well, mm-hmm. because of that emotional and mental state. Mm.
So for someone like, let's say, Chris Brown, who came out to say that he has bipolar disorder, and we all know the story about how he got violent with Rihanna, is it something that you can believe in, that probably was a symptom, a manic, you know?
You know, the challenge that I find mm-hmm. as somebody living with mental illness is that obviously mm-hmm. I don't know his life journey and his right. full life story,
right.
but I find that at times the condition ends up being used at times as an excuse,
mm-hmm.
As an explanation.
Okay.
It's very easy for people to dismiss
or take accountability for
yes,
their actions.
Avoid accountability. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what his medical file says. So okay. I usually refrain from commenting about public figures in that sense, because okay. I don't know what their life story is,
okay.
unless obviously if they've said.
Mm-hmm.
But oftentimes as well, we often explain things to mental illness. Sometimes it's not. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it is, I'm not saying it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I really would like to know what set of criteria
right.
have been fulfilled to
right.
call it bipolar disorder or any other mental
that
illness.
Makes sense. That makes sense. So what if you should meet someone, let's say you meet me for the first time, and you think that, okay, maybe Noella is someone I'd be having a friendship with for a while, do you open up almost immediately that, hey, I have bipolar disorder? So how do you develop friendships, with people?
Like everybody else, they always say to people, when you meet someone, you're not just going to automatically say, hi, I have diabetes,
mm-hmm.
hi, I have hypertension,
mm-hmm.
hi, I have epilepsy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a gradual progression of a relationship.
Okay.
It's not a condition that you necessarily have to declare to people when there's no need.
Maybe
just
so they know.
Psychological safety is an important thing.
Okay.
Like every other condition, like HIV,
mm-hmm.
you don't have to declare openly to people immediately unless you're in a relationship with
mm-hmm.
them or whatever the setup is. So just like bipolar disorder, it's not a disclaimer that you have to declare.
Mm.
In building relationships, you build trust. Trust is an important thing. Confidentiality is an important thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a disclaimer that one has to share.
Okay. And how have you managed it? I mean, is this something you still deal with at the moment? And how do you manage it?
Mm. It's a lifelong illness.
Mm-hmm.
It's something I face every day,
mm-hmm.
In the sense that I take medication every day.
Okay.
I take medication twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
I take an injection every month for the condition.
Mm-hmm.
I see my psychiatrist
right.
on a six weekly basis.
Okay.
I see my psychologist on a weekly basis
mm-hmm.
for psychotherapy. So you can see that it's a multidisciplinary
right.
Team intervention.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a once-off thing where one is automatically being cured. Oftentimes
right.
people struggle with the idea of having to navigate this as a lifelong journey, but being realistic about what it is an important component.
Mm-hmm.
And if you start viewing it as not something that's a hindrance to your life, but as something that is a part of your life, it becomes less cumbersome.
Okay. Well, if you just joined us, you're still live on Joy 99.7 FM. It's Strong and Sassy, and we're having a conversation with Dr. Ngobo. She's a South African who has battled or still battling with bipolar disorder, and basically she's been able to triumph through this difficulty. And so we are talking about, you know, all the in-betweens about this condition, you know, to help sensitize all of us about this condition. You can actually join us live on Facebook as well, to, you know, share your thoughts and contributions. Also via our WhatsApp number, you can text us on 055-1111-997. That's 055-1111-997. All right, Dr. Nglobo, or Joan. You are a medical doctor.
Yes.
How did you decide to, you know, do medicine? I mean, what was the inspiration?
My illness was my inspiration. I believe I always ask the question, I've asked the question to God to say, did I choose my illness, or did I choose to be a doctor, or did, or did it choose me? The original dream was to be a teacher. I believe that I'm also teaching society in what I'm doing currently, in how I'm speaking. When I had my first episode, that's when I decided that I wanted to become a doctor. I had a curiosity about mental health. I think there was also a part of me within myself that was seeking answers, and I thought I'd find it in within the textbooks of psychiatry to understand what happened to me, because I wasn't getting the answers that I want. So medicine became the option. I love people. I love engaging with people. I love helping people. But I always say that I have an advantage. I've had to sit on both sides of the consultation room, seeing people with my condition and also being someone with that condition. I believe that it's my double portion and my double blessing in that way. I don't look at it as a hindrance to me in that sense. I believe that I'm a better doctor because I have this condition, because I have a greater level of empathy and understanding. I'm a better patient because I know my rights. I know when I'm receiving good care. I know what mental healthcare users need. I'm very sensitive about terminologies, for example, to say so-and-so is suffering from bipolar disorder. I'm not suffering from bipolar disorder. I say I'm thriving despite it. Terminology, or to say the bipolar person. There are no bipolar people. There are people living with bipolar disorder. One may say one is being very sensitive about that, but the language we use is very important. So I believe I have a very broadened understanding because I live with this condition, and I've worked. I've been working in the Department of Psychiatry for over 5 years in the specifically in psychiatry, and I've taken that knowledge and I've brought it to the world, so to speak, informing Vocal Mentality and other platforms that I've started.
And was it challenging, you know, navigating life through medical school and dealing with, or thriving, in your words, through your condition?
Oh, that's a very important question, because I didn't just thrive overnight. I'd be creating a very unrealistic story if I were to say that I just woke up and had this acceptance to my condition. Medical school was tough. My illness was tripping me in the worst way in many a time. Rotations in medical school are 6 weeks long. So if I'm booked off work for 2 weeks because I'm in hospital, then I have to return, then I have to recuperate at home for another week. That's already 3 weeks out of 6 weeks missing out on and the core teaching. So it was very difficult. I had to play catch up for a very long time. So I didn't have a very steady university life. Because of that, because I was always playing catch up. I was always trying to bounce back. I was always questioning so many things. I was hiding this thing, you know, from people, from other people. I felt ashamed. Rather, not to say I was hiding, I was ashamed because the people around me knew. What helped is that I had incredible support from my professors in medical school. They really knew what was happening with me. So they really supported me, you know, when they knew I was struggling, when they knew I had to be booked off work, that kind of school at the time, they understood. So it was, yes, it was tough having to catch up all the time, but I feel like they didn't ostracize me or mistreat me. I had a greater, I had a great level of understanding. But like I'm saying, it's been a varied experience along the way. It's not always that I've always had support all the time from people. I have experienced stigma even from professionals as well.
And you have an organization, Mental
Sisters for Mental Health.
Okay, Sisters for Mental Health. We're going to talk more about that particular one. But also, there's a question I actually wanted to ask. I don't know why it's escaping me. But yeah, through your experiences as a medical doctor, I'm sure you've met, you know, so many people with, you know, conditions similar to yours and other ones. How fulfilling has it been, you know, interacting with them and, you know, them sharing the experiences with you and you helping them, you know, thrive through that experiences as well?
You know, as I was saying, that I believe that I'm a better doctor because of that, because I have a greater level of empathy and understanding. I don't have judgment towards my patient when they're struggling. For example, patients sometimes will relapse, meaning you get back to having the presentation of the illness because maybe you're not taking your medication properly, or you're having side effects, or the side effects are discouraging you from taking your treatment, or for whatever reason you have relapsed. So it's easy for people to say, but why don't you take your medication, because you have the medication, now you're relapsing. If you were taking your medication, you'd be fine. I have a greater level of compassion and understanding to know the complexities of that journey, and having that understanding. Obviously, in a therapeutic space, I'm not always declaring to every patient in that therapeutic space in the room to say, oh, by the way, because that's their space. But, you know, knowing the ethics, knowing the rights of patients, knowing that they need to be respected, those nuances are very important for me to be aware of, and I am aware of them, and have a greater sensitivity as a result.
So let's now talk about your organization, and obviously I know you'd say that it was your condition that inspired you to probably come up with it, but aside that, what else, you know, inspired
I had a
creation
I had a need and interest in community. Community meaning engaging about mental health in a socially interactive environment. So to engage, oftentimes people feel lonely. Oftentimes people find that they don't have a space where they can be safe to speak with other people. You don't have to discuss all your issues or your challenges, but just to be in an environment where, for example, we do hikes. We do hikes, and you meet other people in that sense. So it doesn't mean you have to talk mental health, you have to talk mental illness. So we'll have a hike, and then maybe there's a psychiatrist or a psychologist who's there to teach and educate and empower people. Because I realize that there's value in community and engaging in a socially interactive environment. If you were to write a poster saying, we're talking suicide on Saturday, I don't think you'll have a high turnout. But if you say to people, we're talking about struggles and challenges, that's common to all of us. People will have an interest because they want to have the support. So to say we're having a hike where we are talking about struggles, so we are engaging about that, or navigating difficult emotions, that's one of the topics we've had. And then sometimes we'll have seminars as well, where a psychiatrist will be there, a psychologist will be there, an occupational therapist will be there, and most importantly as well, someone with lived experience, someone who's thriving with their condition. I've seen people who are suicide survivors sharing their journey and their form, their own organizations and platforms. Someone who's had, who lives with bipolar disorder, and her mother lives with bipolar disorder as well, and talks about what it's been like, you know, being raised by a mother who lives with this condition and has had many difficult situations related to their condition. So it's a very well-rounded communal thing. It's not just for mental illness, people with mental illness. It's for everybody who has an interest in mental health or wants to engage more about it. There are people who live with mental illness. There are people who are supporters of people with mental illness. There's people who have an who want to have an understanding about this. So that was my inspiration. It was to create a safe, conducive environment to engage about these topics where it's non-threatening and not intimidating.
Is it gender biased, or it's open to all?
It's open to everybody. So let me the name is Sisters for Mental Health, not because it's for the sisters. So when it started very informally. It was a WhatsApp group. So I just thought, the girls are going for a hike. Mm-hmm. So I just called it informally in that way, Sisters for Mental Health.
Okay.
And over time, it's evolved, it's growing. I look forward to seeing what becomes of it. So that's the origins of the name or the thinking behind it. But it's definitely not to say mental health support for women, which is partly part of the reason why my personal platform is Vocal Mentality. Mm-hmm. Because I don't want people to only see me as somebody who discusses mental health only for women. That's
right.
Definitely not how I brand myself or anything. Mm-hmm. I talk mental health for everybody. I am a woman, but when I talk this topic, it's for everybody.
Awesome stuff. And what has been some of your, you know, memorable success stories?
Oh, wow. I have had many of those lovely ones, but one of them, and I'm not just saying because you're sitting across me or I'm in Ghana, but the current biggest highlight is having the impact of reaching people from other parts of the continent, reaching out because of my platform, and they'll reach out via that because they'll want me. I'm amazed at what my work has enabled me to achieve and do, and the places I get to visit, engage about mental health in other countries. That's not a small thing at all. So I'd say that is really one of the big highlights, is to realize that the commonality, the connection, you know, that is really something that's deeply humbling to me.
Awesome stuff. And I mean, based on your experience, you know, thriving through the condition itself and meeting people as a medical doctor throughout the years, what is that one misconception or maybe two misconceptions about the condition that you would like to address?
What I would like to address is the behavior of somebody living with mental illness, particularly bipolar disorder, is not always them. There's a part where one does have to take accountability for the things that they do. Yes, in a state of being unwell, you can do things that are uncharacteristic. I'm not a loud person. I'm not an out of control person. I'm not an immoral person at all. I don't present with every symptom that's on the list. So it's very important for people to know that people with bipolar disorder aren't just these loud, you know, people say these things oftentimes in the work environment, oh, that one is a bipolar. That's a symptom of one, how one can present, but to not always diagnose people in a certain way and assume that that's how we are like all the time. It's not always that people with bipolar disorder are a certain way. We're not one in the same thing. To overdiagnose is something that I always discourage. I always say that telling people that they have a condition when you're not their doctor, you're not going to diagnose someone with a heart condition. You may suspect that they may be unwell, but to diagnose people with mental illness just because you have a comment about them is not a fair thing to say.
Okay.
Yes.
And what are your thoughts on the state of, you know, mental health care? And, you know, the support systems in our society. I mean, what are the most visible gaps you see?
I think it's very disappointing that oftentimes, and I don't think it's just something that's in my country only, I think overall, mental health is the most under-prioritized mental health discipline, I believe, amongst other ones. We have a challenge that infectious diseases are a challenge, and they should be prioritized. But I think when it comes to the priority list, mental health falls far down when actually so many people, if it's the third most debilitating diagnosis out of the three, in the category of three, there's HIV as well, you would think that it would also be prioritized accordingly, but it's not. It's not legitimized as a normal condition. So not as a normal condition, but as a condition that requires enough attention. We shouldn't only focus mental health on Mental Health Awareness Day, Mental Health Awareness Month. We need to make it an ongoing conversation. And I think it's amazing. I mean, the Samke who's 14 would be smiling to see that mental health is not getting the attention that it is. We have a long way to go. But I think we really have come a long way. When I look at my time with my illness younger and where we are now, I think younger people stand a much better chance. They don't have to take 16 years to finally accept the diagnosis and condition. There's more resources made available.
And what would be your, you know, your response to critics who may, you know, question the ability of someone who lives with a condition and their ability to perform in, you know, high stress, you know, professions like medicine, mm. like you did.
Mm. I'm living proof that it's not true. With the right support, mm-hmm. in the right environment, if the condition is controlled, you can do and be anything. Mm-hmm. Professor Ofori Atta's mother was a pilot. Mm-hmm. She lived with the condition, mm-hmm. and she was thriving with it. Mm-hmm. The Melody is a monument, a beautiful monument. Mm-hmm. We are an ambassador for mm-hmm. The Melody. And it's proof that that is just stigma. Mm-hmm. It's stigma related. I'm a medical doctor, mm-hmm. Who has worked in a specialist environment where we were admitting the 23 patients in a night. Mm-hmm. It's challenging, yes. Mm-hmm. But if the condition is stable, you can do and be anything. Mm-hmm. And I'm living proof of that.
Mm-hmm. You're still live on Joy 99.7 FM. It's Strong and Sassy. We're discussing bipolar disorder with Dr. Joan Samke Ngobo.
It's okay. I
had to take my time. I had to take my time with that. But let's talk more on vocal mentality. Mm. What are some of the pushbacks or resistance you have experienced?
You know, I have been amazed at times when I was doing different platforms and radio interviews, the kind of questions that I'd be asked at times, mm-hmm. which shows at times how misinformed mm-hmm. people can be about it. Mm-hmm. So I'd say the pushback I've experienced is related to people's lack of understanding of the condition. So mm-hmm. it's their internal processes. Mm-hmm. There's people who, within the medical field, I've had incredible support on the most part, mm-hmm. you know, but not everybody. Not everybody has a 100% scorecard mm-hmm. where everyone is always supportive mm-hmm. of you. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, I also thought, have I committed career suicide to be open about my own journey?
Right.
What about people's misconceptions about my capabilities? What if people look at me a certain way? And I've seen some of the things that people will assume. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they're more cautious now because they find someone who's empowered and speaking. But it wasn't always like that from mm-hmm. the beginning. Mm-hmm. There's people who will doubt your capabilities because of their own misconceptions and biases related mm-hmm. to the diagnosis. Mm-hmm. So the pushback has been related to, say, I remember one of the interviews I did, somebody said, aren't people scared of you? And I said, but I'm not swinging on chandeliers in the consulting room, so why would they be afraid of me?
Right.
If my condition is not controlled, I'm in the hospital. Mm-hmm. Someone with a fracture is not going to drive with the fracture. That's understand right. That. Mm-hmm. So if you are unwell, I won't be in the work setting. Okay. But in the work setting, if I'm well, I'm functional like everybody else. So okay. It's breaking the stigma, basically. I think the greatest pushback has been related to stigma.
So we have a question from one of our listeners. Says, good evening. Please, is there any relationship between depression and bipolar disorder? Can the same person experience depression and bipolar disorder? And that's from Nanaya Ayumensa.
Thank you for your question, Nanaya. Yes, there is a relationship between the two. Even when I mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. in the past as well, I'm talking about the psychiatry textbook, mm-hmm. they used to be in the same category, meaning mm-hmm. they used to be termed mood disorders. Mm-hmm. So it was deemed to be a type of mood disorder, but over time it's been found that it's not necessarily a type of mood disorder, it's a standalone. Mm-hmm. But bipolar disorder, and I'm putting it simply for the sake of understanding in a simple way without complicating it, is to say, mm-hmm. when you say bi, think of it as two, mm-hmm. two ends of the stick, mm-hmm. the highs and the lows.
Okay.
So there's manic episodes, mm-hmm. the ones I explained, mm-hmm. then there's depressive episodes, okay. which you'll present with symptoms that of depression, basically. Mm-hmm. So that's how I can best explain it in mm-hmm. a simple way.
Okay.
So there is a relationship.
Okay. Here's another one that says, that's from Isidra on Facebook, says, thank you for sharing your lived experience with us, Dr. Samke. As a person with lived experience with bipolar disorder 2, your story is very empowering.
Oh wow, that is so wonderful to know. Thank you so much, Essay. Mm.
I guess my last question to you would be, what is your opinion on the use of medication versus, you know, holistic alternatives, you know, treatment for managing bipolar disorder, and how do you balance these approaches in your own life?
Mm. Bipolar disorder is a chemical imbalance. Mm-hmm. And in it being a chemical imbalance, it requires mood stabilizers. Mm-hmm. If one experiences what I explained earlier, psychotic symptoms, you may require antipsychotics as well. But it's very important to be on medication. I don't know if I have the bias because I am a doctor as well, but I've seen the value of what is called pharmacotherapy, mm-hmm. that medication plays an important role. But what I want to highlight is the fact that the management of bipolar disorder is that it's a multidisciplinary team approach. Mm-hmm. Multidisciplinary team, it's different aspects of management that play a role. Mm-hmm. We are multifaceted beings. We are mind, body, and soul. So mm-hmm. I don't dismiss the importance of religion, for example. Mm-hmm. I would never say to someone, dismiss your religious beliefs and only stick to the one thing. Mm-hmm. If that is an important aspect of your life, it's very important, but not at the expense of your of say needing the medication mm-hmm. as well. So I take, for example, for me mm-hmm. as on a personal journey, I take my medication twice a day and once a month as well with the injectable I spoke mm-hmm. about. I see my psychologist, that's psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. My religion is very important to me. I'm Christian. Mm-hmm. God plays a very important role, not to a state of being religious and grandiose and a state mm-hmm. of being unwell. Mm-hmm. So it's also at times, maybe as an example with the religion element, mm-hmm. how then do you tell if one is being overly religious and unwell? Mm-hmm. My family can tell when I'm not stable enough and I'm mm-hmm. presenting when it's now deviating from just normal prayer mm-hmm. and normal functionality, and then it's becoming, deviating from my normal. Mm-hmm. So it's just to say that our holistic well-being is mm-hmm. important. Exercise is important. Eating well is important. Mm-hmm. Journaling is important. There are so many aspects that help in our well-being. Mm-hmm. I would really encourage people to explore things that are within, that are proven and tried and tested mm-hmm. For their well-being.
Mm. So there's another question here from one of my friends says, how does she thrive through love relationships with the condition?
Like every other relationship. Mm-hmm. My relationships are, I don't have to declare to people mm-hmm. about my condition. Mm-hmm. My friendships are healthy. Mm-hmm. When I meet people, if people see bipolar before they see some gay, then they're not worth being in my life. Right. That is a problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, let's talk more on your advocacy work and vocal mentality. I've already asked you about your success stories. I think we've spoken about your challenges as well.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, what more do you do and how can one be a part of your organization?
Yeah. So vocal mentality came at a time when I had a public bipolar episode 4 years ago, just before COVID. Mm-hmm. That's when it happened, February 3, 2000. And the name vocal mentality mm-hmm. means speaking up. Mm-hmm. It means having a mindset that is empowered as mm-hmm. opposed to having one that is oppressed. Mm-hmm. So I started my personal platform. It's a website, vocalmentality.com. Mm-hmm. And there's also my Instagram handle as well, where I speak about mental health. I usually do interviews, I do talks mm-hmm. in corporate environments and in schools as well. Mm-hmm. I'm very passionate, particularly about the high scholars, because it's the time at which I was diagnosed and didn't have the support that I would have liked to have and see. Mm-hmm. So I love speaking at schools. I speak in wellness campaigns and corporates as mm-hmm. well. So vocal mentality is where I share, I share the work that I do. I share my personal journey mm-hmm. and I also collaborate with other organizations mm-hmm. Related to mental health. Mm-hmm. So I'm partnering currently in one of the organizations back home mm-hmm. to see how we can find each other with the work they do and the work I do. Mm-hmm. I believe there's no need to create or reinvent the wheel. Mm-hmm. So it's to see how can I bring something that is some gear into mm-hmm. the space, and how can they be of support to me as opposed mm-hmm. to doing the same thing over and over. So vocal mentality is really my pride and joy. Mm. My company is 4 years old, still, learning, growing. There's different aspects to it. So, the platform itself, I explain who I am, what I do. And I also treat it as a blog as well, where I share different interviews I've done and conversations I've had as well. Mm. Yes.
So let's say I'm somebody who, lives with a condition, but I'm in Ghana. I mean, your company's based in South Africa, is that correct?
Yes.
How and I want to be a part of your organization. Is it possible?
Yes. I'm open to collaboration and engaging with other people. My view or dream is to have a global reach. Mm-hmm. So I am from South Africa, but engaging with, the way I met Professor Ofori Atta, we met in South Africa, but here I am in Ghana as an example to show that I really have I developed a stronger passion for Africa. Knowing the challenges that are faced and the commonalities of those struggles related to mental health. So the sky is the limit. But actually, it's not the limit. I met her at a conference. She told me she wants me to visit her country. I'm here in Ghana. So it's not a limitation, basically.
So what would be your vision, your biggest vision for the space you're in? Mental health, bipolar disorder. What's that big vision that you would want to one day realize or would want to see happen?
In this lifetime, I would like for mental illness and mental health overall, not just bipolar disorder, to be respected like every other medical condition. I don't want it to be recognized separately. I wanted for it to not be ridiculed. So in this lifetime, I hope that mental health starts getting the respect and recognition and validation that it deserves. It is debilitating like other conditions. It can be debilitating. So it's very important for it to be recognized accordingly.
Right. That was supposed to be my last question to you, but we have one more from a listener. So it says, hi, can migraine lead to bipolar disorder, or more important, bipolar lead to migraine? Which one is the most likely situation?
A migraine would not lead to bipolar disorder.
Okay.
Bipolar disorder largely has a genetic predisposition. It relates a lot to, maybe can be triggered by, say, obviously postpartum process of pregnancy.
Depression
can induce it. So a migraine would not necessarily cause bipolar disorder.
Okay.
Maybe the struggles and stresses related to having bipolar disorder, the tension, headaches can. But migraine is a specific symptom cluster within, you know, a diagnosis. So they're not interrelated or interchangeable.
Okay.
So the answer would be a no.
Okay. I've had a wonderful conversation with you, Dr. Samke. I guess what would be your last words? So I can wrap up with that.
It's been a wonderful experience. I'm so humbled and grateful that my work is putting me in the spaces that I am in. I'd like to encourage people in the lovely country of Ghana to give mental health a chance, educate yourselves, empower yourselves. If you wish to know and wish to understand, don't judge, but rather seek to educate yourself. That would be my last word.
Awesome stuff. Very profound statement. Says give mental health a chance, educate yourself, and don't go about showing your your lack of education about the condition, especially if you don't know about it. But that has been my conversation with Dr. Samke Nglovo. Maybe you should help us with that.
I need to give forgiveness for saying I was so nervous and excited,
right,
and then I said Kwame Nkrumah so badly, so I forgive you. We are fair and square in that
sense. Right.
Dr. Nglovo.
Right, it was awesome.
Yes.
I've learned a lot. I've had so many takeouts, and I'm very proud of you.
Thank you so much.
Through a condition like that, being a medical doctor, that's huge.
Thank you.
I'm sure a lot of people who have listened tonight have had so many takeouts as well and would be inspired by
Thank
your incredible
you so
story.
Much.
But that has been our conversation on Strong and Sassy. My name is Noella Karenyali. I sat in for Enimo Enim Ado. Same time next week. She'll be right here in the seat bringing you another fantastic edition of the show. Until then, enjoy the rest of our programs right here on Joy 99.7 FM.